The first item I have on the agenda for this evening is Jim Harden, resident of Holden. My voice will go to the gentleman.
Hey, good evening. Joe Danko, Environmental Design Partnership. Here we have a skirt report, residential holdings, and their application for a 16-unit residential apartment community located at 112 Harrison Avenue. General overview map of the area. The yellow highlight in the center of the screen is the parcel location. Again, at 112 Harrison Avenue, immediately adjacent to 108 Harrison Avenue, which is another apartment community owned by the skirt report. We are about halfway between the village of South Plains Falls and the end of Bluebird Road. We're on the south side of the road, opposite the quarry. We are within the UR zoning district, where multifamily residential dwellings are permitted at a density of one unit for every 5,000 square feet of land. We have roughly or slightly over 3 acres of land. When we run our density computations based upon a site with no constraints, we have an allowed density of just below 18 units per acre. As you see, when we go into the site plan, we are proposing 16 units, so well below the allowable density within the UR zoning district. Existing conditions of the property. Again, as I said, on Harrison Avenue, the south side of the road, we have 3 acres of land. Existing single-family residential house occupies the northeast corner of the property. The remaining land is a small yard, and we'll say generally forested for the remaining 2.8 or so acres of the property. Just to read forward, all the other maps have been north. This one, or north up, this is now north to the right-hand side. Harrison Avenue runs east-west along the right side of the map. What we are proposing is to develop the site with four-unit apartment buildings, two stories. Each one of the buildings will have an attached single-car garage, parking behind the garage with tandem space, and additional parking located on the opposite side of the street. Our overall parking ratio right now is 3 to 3.5 spaces, including the garage, per unit. So we are well parked and shouldn't be any issues with parking on the premise itself. We're proposing a single curb cut on Harrison Avenue. Enters the site, immediately come to a mail kiosk and some parking spaces on the left-hand side of the road. The remainder of the site is the four buildings, parking, refuse enclosure, a turnaround location for larger vehicles as well as emergency vehicles. Stormwater will be managed on site. We will be connected to municipal water and municipal sewer supplies. With that, we're here tonight for concept review. I'll entertain any comments the board may have so we can incorporate that into our next level of plans, which would be the preliminary detailed plans. Thank you.
Questions in this applicant?
It's a typo then that three of the units say just four-unit building and one of them says four-unit with four garage spaces, typical?
That would be a typo. They all have four garages, one garage per unit.
Okay. Do you foresee it being any kind of an issue having the mail kiosk positioned in front of the five or six spaces that are opposite the first building?
So we do have ample parking on the site. I think the town requires two and a half spaces per unit, exclusive or including the garages. We're up around three. So some of those spaces may be striped for visitor parking or mail kiosk parking only.
Okay, well, that's one.
There is ample parking throughout the remainder of the site.
I mean, normally it's not uncommon to see a mail kiosk that has parking spaces in front of it for people to park while they're collecting their mail. But I didn't know those would be designated for that, or if it was just hopefully nobody's parking
certainly we can make accommodations so that they're only for the mail kiosk or 15-minute parking, something like that.
Yeah, the mail truck likes to pull up. So he doesn't have to get out of the truck. So I live in a complex involved with that kind of view, so they can just dip in.
And some of them will work out with the local delivery service as we progress the site plan to make sure we're accommodating their needs. I know it varies by post office how they want their mailboxes arranged and accessed on the site.
We don't have them. Is
that the work?
That's
all.
That's all.
No, Fort Everett.
Is that one down? Yeah.
There's a note in the corner of your property. It would be the northwest corner. It says AIF disturbed D call L. I'm just curious what that is.
What does it say?
It says disturbed in parentheses, and then it says D call / L.
That sounds like something that's related to the boundary. Maybe a disturbed iron pipe. You say IP?
AIF.
I can look into that. I think it's just some surveyors locating a point that's disturbed in the field, so there may be adjustments to the boundary, or maybe that might have needed to be adjustments to the boundary.
The other ones all say IPF, that one says AIF, so.
Yeah, IPF is iron pipe,
That I knew, you just didn't know what an AIF was.
Yes. Well, I haven't heard of it. Well, that's called confusion.
So then, just to see if you're paying attention.
Is there are these the building similar to any of the previous projects? There's just no elevation. What's the impact?
Yeah, these would be similar to Harrison Quarry.
How far away from Harrison Quarry are projects?
3/4 of a mile.
You're going to need a SWIP, right, Joe?
Yes, we are going to disturb regular nature. We're going to need full stormwater pollution prevention plan. Give you a relative location. Here's our site. Here is Harrison Quarry.
Do you own behind that? Is there one behind that too?
No, these are, I can't think of the name. Citizens Reserve, correct.
Do they own the property now? Or is there a contract?
I believe he is closed on the property.
Okay. And what about, we have a lot of neighbors coming out. Various ones. I believe it's the ones closer to the village that came. And this land adjacent to Mr. Charles, is that under consideration, or is that part of the
village? That would be this parcel here?
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about that. I know the Lee and Ellie parcel here is currently under development.
Okay, that's what
by Rich. This is also additional land owned by Chris Kermorn as an approved department community on that as well. So we're well below the thresholds for New York State Fire Code. New York State Fire Code requires 2 meters of access for over 100 multifamily units. We do have a property immediately to the west that has, I believe it is 30 units. On a single means, and there's 28 units on a single means of access. I don't know of any issues that occurred, any emergency service issues that occurred with having a single point of access. Certainly, our frontage on Harrison Avenue is limited. I don't think that we want to put the second means of access in that location with such a short distance between two curb cuts.
I'm sorry, do you consider it a what entrance?
Boulevard.
I'm going to say I probably have to do this. For just for 16 units. There's plenty of room to get away from stuff, so if there wasn't people don't have to back to the premises, they can just get across the other side across the mountain. Fire department's already made it clear if there's a car accident blocking them from a fire, they're happy to move the car. So.
Yeah. Any further questions for the time?
this hasn't been, obviously hasn't been included in any traffic studies. Are you considering looking into that? Or?
Certainly, we have available site distance. We can provide site distance evaluation. There's only 16 units. I don't think it raises to the level of a full traffic study. We can be generating about 9 trips during PM peak hour. So very low trip generation for multifamily units. I think it's 0.62 trips per unit in the PM peak hour for the IT code.
How many apartments is, or how many bedrooms in each of these units?
I believe there is 2 bedrooms. I can verify that. I believe they are 2 bedrooms with a attached garage.
So you're expecting 2 vehicles per unit, which would be 32 vehicles, but you're expecting fewer than 9 to leave during peak hours?
That is generally what is understood by the trip generation codes.
30%.
Not everybody leaves at the same time.
Right.
If we have a single family, we're closer to 1 trip per household.
Right.
In the peak hour of an apartment community, it's a much lower threshold.
Mm-hmm. Good for a fire hydrant in there, anyways? I don't believe the fire hydrants are very close. There's one on the corner and one up. Maybe we should have Jesse look into that to see if we can help that fall over the 800 feet. Okay, something gets going in there. We've got a hydrant in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be good? Check that with Jesse? Or?
Yeah, we're certainly willing to work with the water department and the fire district to make sure we have people.
Yeah,
people see hydrants.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an older system down there, so just in case something. So I think, can you do that, Jim? Check with Jesse on that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Probably help with the insurance on it too.
We're definitely going to need to have the appropriate water supply and fire protection for them.
You've got all the supplies there. It's an older system. The items are further apart. I don't think they can be very standards. So if we get something like this here, that would be the time to put that in.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Is that the sidewalk you're proposing to extend in front of the project?
Yeah, we'll extend it from the western side of the property, so if you want to wait and run it to our eastern property line.
Okay, we can share control of blaming these folks out here.
I can attempt it.
Sorry, I'm just enjoying seeing the glowing orb of flame in the sky.
Yeah.
Joe, are you going to need an extension to the 2 districts?
I'd have to look into if we're going to need an extension to the extension or not.
Okay.
I think a lot of land on Harrison is already in the district, but certainly something we can look into when we go through the process as needed.
Okay.
Yep. Damn. If I was pulling, I didn't even pull it down.
Yeah, the water sewer right there. I don't see any issue with any pull for this property.
Let's see, there's no port, so I'm going to assume there's no wetlands on this site.
Yeah, no wetlands. We've had wetland biologists on the property, also looking at the species habitat. No wetlands or appropriate habitat found on the property.
And you'll be doing a full blown lighting plan and landscaping plan?
Correct.
No.
it's going to be too practical. This will be a
hard improvement. My name is Josh O'Connor. I'm a professional engineer licensed in the state of New York. I work for Green and Peterson Incorporated, and we've been contracted by Great Petroleum to bring forward a project for redevelopment of the extra part at 1401 Route 9 near Exit 17 over by Lamplighter Way. I'm sure you're all familiar with the location. There's an existing extra part now. It's been in operation since long before the adoption of the local zoning ordinance. Due to that, in anticipation of this application, we went before the Zoning Board of Appeals and we were granted a special use permit for the fueling station portion of the operation to go forward. So as mentioned, the project site is located at the southeast part of the intersection of Lamplighter Boulevard and Route 9. The existing facility is about a 2,500 square foot retail market. They have existing diesel fueling canopies in the rear, passenger vehicle fueling canopy in the front, and the site is generally paved and extremely organized as far as access to and from. What the applicant is proposing, is essentially an improvement and expansion of the existing use. Their intention is to raise the existing facility, to remove the existing tanks, and essentially to redevelop the parcel as a new ground up development. One of the things we're able to do with the project will expand the size of the retail market, offer additional food offerings, reduce the number of curb cuts, clean the site significantly, provide modern stormwater management, because there really isn't anything now. We are aware that there are some flooding issues that occur there. We plan on addressing that. And we plan on being able to provide some control and refinement to the way the site's operating today. We did look at initially, and this is one of the questions that we dealt with the ZBA, your charges to look at traffic as a component of the special use permit. We've done a preliminary trip generation. It appears that the site is going to generate over 100 trips delta that would trigger a traffic impact study. So we actually started the traffic impact study. We don't have the results of that now. We're looking for a sketch review tonight. We want to take the board's comments and move forward, if possible, with an earnest design, and then come back in the next month or so for a full preliminary site plan review. As you're aware, Lamplighter Estates adjoins the property to the rear. Obviously, the boulevard to the east, there is a fence along that will be maintained. It's our anticipation that we'll provide fence and screening along the rear of the property. This comment that the ZBA had, and we've also heard from the public preliminarily. Touching a little bit on the facility, the retail market is what you would normally be accustomed to for a facility of this sort. Food offerings will be unique and different. They are working with a chef out of their home market, and they have the intention of providing on-site prepared foods, ranging from your standard breakfast sandwiches to quinoa bowls and other chef-designed and prepared food items. They are providing some exterior seating as well. Touching quickly on parking, the count required for a facility the size is 48 stalls. We're providing 44. Additionally, we are able to count the fueling positions as parking stalls, and that puts us well above the required parking. One of the comments that the ZBA did mention was they think that our the short-term truck parking could be shifted a little bit forward, so we'll shift that forward prior to our full design. I think that covers the major points. If you guys have any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Are you proposing to demolish the existing building?
Yes, sir. Yes.
And I wish the board to consider a proposal where the front setback is not meeting the town requirement.
I'm sorry, the front setback will meet the town requirement. The currently the fueling canopy for the, there may be, this was in a sketch phase, so what's provided on the table is probably not perfect. The front setback is 80 feet that's depicted here, and the canopy's outside of 80 feet. Currently, the canopy on the existing site is in the front setback, and that's a non-conformance that we're able to ameliorate with this development. Yes, it is. And that will be refined prior to our full submission.
Any further questions?
What architectural style would you describe?
I think what this is Tom Daniel, the Great Petroleum, and he represents the applicant. And I believe that their terminology is a modernized New England farm aesthetic. We do have some renders, and this is a render of a lake building, so homes and textures would be appropriate. If you're familiar, one of these has been constructed in Schenectady on Erie Boulevard at the old Grossman Bargain lumber facility, opposite the casino. So if you find your way down there and you want to get a feel for what it looks like, that is what we're building. The size won't be exactly the same, and the configuration won't be exactly the same, but the architectural textures, materials, and style will be the same as that.
So maybe you can help me. It's a learning process.
Sure.
I've been on the board for a long time, and we're starting to get more retail stuff. You mentioned something about a traffic study in 100 trips,
okay,
blah, 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 and something delta something. I've lost track of where you were with that. And
that's fine. So
we look for traffic generated by housing projects or peak hour traffic, people coming and going from the housing project. This is obviously traffic generated by the business or the commercial activity on site.
That's right.
So please explain.
So generally speaking, aside from the town, this is on a state highway, so we have to go to New York State DOT for approval for the modification of the curb cuts, which DOT should be pleased with this. We're reducing this wide open sea to a couple of controlled access points. So we use IDE to do a trip generation based upon the offerings at the site and the square footage. Generally speaking, so you use that to predict the number of trips that would generally access the site. So we do a preliminary trip generation for the proposed condition and then assess the number in new trips. So New York State DOT standard is, and it's somewhat wishy-washy, but the general standard is if you propose more than 100 new trips during that peak hour event, they then request a traffic study to secure the permit. So we already recognize that this will, the business case hopes that this will generate more than that 100 in the peak hour. And so as I said, we've already moved forward with that. Now, as far as the
back in your mind.
I'm sorry?
If I can interrupt for just one second. You're expecting 100 unique trip generations for this site? These aren't people that are driving by anyways, pulling in, but you're talking about people specifically going out of their way to come to the...
Precisely, no.
Well, so, that's what I'm wondering.
No, I can clarify that.
Making trips happen.
So the method of calculation doesn't presume that they're passed by or drawn. So it's based on a regression study of how sites like this perform.
Okay.
Right? So the traffic impact study is used to determine where the trips are going to come from. We don't anticipate drawing trips away from other locations. This is not expected to be a destination per se.
You're saying more than 100 trips generated during peak time.
Mm-hmm.
It may very well be 100 cars that are already on Route 9.
That's exactly what we anticipate.
That's why I'm trying to
guess. Yes, that is exactly. We hope that this will be attractive enough to people driving to I-87 in the morning, that they're going to stop here instead of other offerings where they may have overlooked it in the past. And we're hoping that people driving home will make that same decision. As you're aware, they do have diesel fueling now. and we're not offering more diesel fueling. And to that point, this is not a truck stop. We are not going to have long-term parking. We don't anticipate trucks idling here at all.
No vehicles overnight?
No overnight vehicles, no. We're limited to fueling, accessing the retail market and the food offerings, getting back in the vehicle and motoring them.
The short-term parking, it might be somebody that fuels, pulls ahead, backs into a slot, goes in, gets something.
Grabs some lunch and hits the road. Yep. That's what we're looking for. And that's what Drake Petroleum intends to enforce on this.
That was the number four question.
Yes.
Because the sites, the spaces aren't necessarily designed in a way that I see pull-up temporary bit. They're back in slots. Obviously, because of the
site configuration went into us in that regard. But that said, if parking isn't any easier, we don't expect people. This is what the site allows us to do.
Right. So that's why
and honestly, we're aware of the condition now. There's a lot of vehicles that are there. The site's been used historically for a certain purpose, and I don't think that's the intended. The intended purpose going forward.
Well, I think at the moment, it's the backside there is a parking lot.
It is a loosely a
parking lot. Where trucks are parked, but I don't know that I've ever seen any in there at night run or idle.
There's always a lot of horse trailers, like right at the end of the race season.
Well, they may be staging there, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if that's a contracted thing or just normal.
To the best of my knowledge,
over the land
and Tom's knowledge, that is not. That's not a use that was anticipated or allowed, and as far as you know, the home office isn't even aware that the site's used in that fashion, so we don't have an intention of continuing that.
Where are you at in your permitting process with DOT?
So, I've had a phone conversation with Mr. Tedesco, and once we close this meeting, I'm going to make sure that I don't have any revisions that I need to make to the site layout. When that's finalized, I'm going to take my traffic impact study, which should be completed sometime in the next week and a half, have an informal sit-down with Mr. Tedesco, get his rough assessment of what he thinks about it, and fill out the Stage 1 and Stage 3 permit, the highway work permit, and apply for it. So at this point, we're in sketch review, but we haven't spoken or presented anything informally.
So you anticipate that application will be in like 3 weeks? To the state?
I would like to hope that that's the case, Jim, but obviously there's moving pieces to account for. We should at minimum have a coordination meeting with DOT prior to our next meeting, at minimum, and we will have presented a traffic study. As you know, that's not going to generate a formal response from DOT,
mm-hmm.
But I'd be happy to communicate, informally. To be perfectly frank, the timeline looks like we'll be a September meeting for our next meeting. Just realistically, we want to make sure that you and the TDE have an opportunity to review this. So even if I could get it out in the next few weeks, what would we be served by being here at the end of August? I think it's end of September. I think it's a reasonable time frame to have some comments back from DOT. So that is our intention.
Yeah, I'd like to at least see some preliminary reaction to the proposed access.
I would agree with you, Frank. Something we'd like to do early.
Right.
But as you're aware, DOT doesn't issue any formal response unless you apply. So
correct.
You're not intending to do anything along the new southern boundary of this property, are you? That'll still be, is that still intended to be an open, paved parking
lot? You mean a longer night?
Along
it's adjoining Fitzgerald.
Yep.
So right now it is open.
Yep.
It is completely open. We are proposing to demo the asphalt to our new property line. And just a point I missed, they did recently procure another 50-foot wide swath along this to facilitate this project. We plan on optimizing the pavement to that property line, infilling the grass, and providing curved parking on our site.
Okay, so then that would... The tractor trailer parking spots that would require the back end.
Yes, they are.
They would be coming through. So.
Yes, and we have, and it's on the sketch site plan. We've worked through the truck carrying movement.
Yep.
And having space for it. But yeah.
So
not pulled through from the adjoining.
So you are committing that there's not going to be overnight trucks there all night idling. It's in and out.
Absolutely.
So is the store open 24/7?
Yes.
As we move forward, you'll have a lighting plan?
Yes, we do have a preliminary one now, understanding where we'll be using LED lights that don't exceed the town's maximum light, and working hard to control lights still, and, you know, in accordance with the code. You know, the reason I didn't present the lighting plan, it's Drake Petroleum's vendor that does them. I wasn't really happy with the preliminary plan. They had a light toward the rear, and well, that light there, so I didn't want to present that.
Do you perceive
that
there's coming out here?
It would be fully actualized on both left in and out on both. We will have signage now. If you look at the truck turning movement plan we have there, trucks will have to access enter only on this and exit only on this. We cannot have truck access on this entrance, and that will be signed from the road.
Is there any reason, I'm not proposing you do this, but is there any reason not to just make one entrance an entrance and one an exit? For everybody?
Is there a reason not to?
Yeah, well, no, you're saying that you're going to put a signage up that says that the trucks can't enter on the southern entrance, which obviously would flow to the back fuel pumps. That makes sense. Why not just make the northern one the entrance and the southern one the exit? You could have a left and right arrow lane going out the exit.
I mean, I can't think of a reason not to. No.
Well, I'm not suggesting you do it. I don't build these.
We have to talk to their development team, and really we have to talk to DOT. As we move forward with DOT, it might be something they ask for.
Well, we better have cars coming in and out, not have cars pulling in, cutting across in front of them, and pulling that one entrance.
I don't think that would be unmanageable, but it is worth looking at.
In my opinion, I don't see DOT approving full access driveways in such close proximity to one another. I think that's what you're going to end up with anyhow.
Okay.
But that's just projection.
Just seems it might be a little smoother for traffic.
I understand.
I saw that the Chippo 12B, the project site, is located in a designated sensitive. Did you complete your consultation yet?
No, we haven't. Generally speaking, obviously we can provide documentation that the site has undergone significant impact. It's a pretty straightforward one, but no, we haven't made a decision. That will happen.
And you'll be providing a full detailed landscape plan at the next level, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Full package, landscaping, lighting, SWIFT. Obviously, this is going to require stormwater management.
How far have you started your calc check? And so far, the drain is also so.
I have done some preliminary calcs. There are, you know, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the site. Basically, there are a series of dry wells located along the Lamplighter Boulevard boundary. And that is the whole and entirety of the stormwater management. From a modeling perspective, I'm going to disregard those in the existing condition because I really have no way of capturing how they perform. So for the sake of modeling, we're going to go to the worst case scenario and we're going to assume that they don't exist. So our design will be with the intention of treating site like it doesn't have any current stormwater management practice. We've done the infiltration testing on the site. Obviously, the groundwater, and it's basically uniform coarse sand as far as you want to dig. It's great for infiltration there. You know, we expect that really the volume of water that hits the site and, you know, the age of the existing dry well system and, you know, the standard it was developed to, it doesn't perform anymore.
When we did sort of sound
a little bit, we pulled out the
The tanks will be, yes. The tanks are currently in conformance with the standard. They do have monitoring wells on the site, and they were previously demised per PUG standards, no open spill ticket or anything on the site. But yes, all the tanks will be removed and replaced by that.
The only other thing I would say is, along with our limitation of trucks not idling in the wee hours of the morning, it might be nice to have it on the site plan that the dumpsters will not be retrieved and emptied between certain hours.
You can do that.
I think it, you know, 9 o'clock and 6 or whatever. I know some of the garbage companies take advantage of commercial areas to pick up garbage and bang the dumpsters in.
They know those are full and they don't have to wait for people to put the tanks
in. So if you put it on the plan, it gives you leverage when you tell the company, you can't come in here at 2:30 and pick it up. So.
Do we know? Thank you.
Josh, also on the EAF, question 20 talks about, has there been has the site or any adjoining property been subject to remediation? The answer is yes.
No.
If yes, describe. There's no description, so I don't know.
So that's probably the speedway. It picks up something within the vicinity and we do it on.
Well, that's fine. It's
like,
whatever it is, whatever the yes is, can you?
We'll look for clarification. I did check the DEC's database for this site in specific. We may be in proximity to one, and that's why I triggered that.
Okay.
But there isn't a spill associated with this site. There isn't remediation associated with this site that's older than, that's newer than 30 years. We anticipate reducing the amount of impervious on the site versus the configuration that you have to pay. You know, this is compacted gravel, earth.
You're including that gravel part in the back as impervious right now?
Yes, we have to. It clearly doesn't trade any value.
You indicate in the EAF that you're not going to connect to the municipal sewer?
Well, when the EAF was complete, we weren't certain that there was a sewer. And since that's been submitted, obviously, we've worked with the town, we've talked with you, and we've talked with the previous LaVerge.
Yes.
And we're coordinating with them for a connection. And frankly, the completion of that public works project is going to hopefully time with the initiation of our project going forward. We obviously don't want to have our new retail market not have sewer. So.
What I might suggest is you then resubmit a new seeker form on your next submission.
Okay.
With the updated information.
Mm-hmm. But yes, we do anticipate connecting to that. And
yeah, I'd like to have a proper form in the file for that.
Understood. We have the, I do have the plan, the design plans that show where they anticipate the location of the connection, force main with, and we anticipate using the E1 system that essentially they're asking us to use.
Okay.
I don't. Thank you for your time.
It's been a
nice
question.
Thank you. I'm sorry. It'll be good. I've had a lot of
wildlife. Oh, he could get wildlife.
A lot of wildlife.
They got invited to submit the next application. No, this is just kind of, it's got to come back for preliminary.
So we're going to invite people to review on some complaints?
Yes. All right. And then the public hearing has been set. The public hearing will probably be set for October at this point.
Well, I don't want them to design the whole person to review the
plan. Well, get your comments in as soon as possible.
Let's see if it'll help.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, thanks. This is Farnham Road.
Right.
Oh, look look at that. I sold product. It kind of makes me not using this supply. Baker Falls Solar is.
Is this the next one, Bird?
No, this is a town right of way that the town already owns. And that's what's unique about this. And it's not improved.
But they're not planning on using it?
No, but Baker Falls Solar is. Okay. They're going to come off front, as you can see. But Baker Falls is down here. It's coming in here.
Right.
But this is unimproved.
Are we making Baker Falls?
No. We are doing the dirt. It's not like a subdivision that someone's dedicated to. We take over the improvement. They're not going to prove that for solar. I mean, they might have two trucks every 6 months driving down.
So what does that affect these guys?
This, no, it doesn't, but they got to be. And that's an unusual situation for us. Yes.
CEO of Northeastern Biochar Solutions, and the application in front of you is for our subsidiary company, Saratoga Biochar Solutions. Our intent is to request permission to construct a carbon fertilizer manufacturing facility in the Monroe Industrial Park. I'd like to introduce a few of our team members, if I could. Joining up here is Bryce Meeker, the president of our holding company and also an officer in our project company. From Lemering, Chrysler, and Saratoga, we have Charles Dumas, our counsel. We have Matt Huntington from Studio A, Landscape Architecture and Engineering. The gentleman back here, we have Andrew Bilsbach from Sterling Environmental. He's handling our permitting, this firm. And we have two folks here, Patrick Ellis and Jeremy Tenson from Casella Organics, who would be the primary provider of feedstock for our facility. We're also joined in the back by the Saratoga Economic Development Council folks and David Carroll in the back row there, our team. So our intent is to construct a facility that converts biosolids and other biomass into a very valuable and useful fertilizer product. We do that in a very clean way. Our intention is to bring value to the town of Monroe. We recognize that this would be the host community for our business. We want to make that relationship absolutely successful. I'm going to turn it over to Bryce Meeker to go through our presentation, and he'll be joined by Matt Huntington to talk about and answer questions about our site plan. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention today. We're very happy to be up here. I would like to say that this meeting is probably a little premature, but the purpose and the inquiry is very timely. We're very interested in the town planning board taking the agency status in the environmental secret review with the Department of the DEC. Basically, it's going to be a coordinated review, and the request today that we'd like to ask planning board is to get the agency status and support. That'll help us move things along, I think, and we can put you in a position to control. I think it's preferred. So, anyway, the company, it's a new company, somewhat of a new concept, carbon fertilizer, and you probably haven't heard of it. But it's what defines green infrastructure today. And that's what we're looking to build here in the Monroe Industrial Park. We're looking to be across the street from the Hexion plant, the second tenant of the industrial park. And so we basically are an environmental company, but we also look at being a good host, you know, working well with the community as a host community and as a program as well. Ray's already introduced myself. I've had a lot of experience in the environmental side of it, in renewable fuels, renewable energy for the past 15 years. Ray has been in the technology industry. Our other partner, Lee, who's not here today, he's been in the biosolids servicing throughout the Midwest, basically spreading biosolids on agricultural land from throughout the Midwest. He came on early on because he wants to get out of that practice. I think a lot of us do. It's not necessarily something that anybody should be proud of. It's caused a lot of environmental issues, which we're trying to seek to resolve with this. It's also causing a lot of carbon emissions in the atmosphere, which we would like to replace with some of this carbon dating, which is very unique in the industry today. And many might be familiar with solar panels and wind. That tends to be carbon neutral. It tends to be a carbon footprint. Ours is carbon negative. It takes it a step further. We actually avoid a lot of greenhouse gas emissions. So, I don't know how far, if you've all reviewed the presentation, we can try to skip through things a little bit, but front end. But one of the biggest issues we're trying to resolve here is both an issue on the municipal side of what happens to biosolids, which is a big issue in the region. Probably this region is more constrained biosolids disposal than any other area in the country. For New York State, it's the largest export of biosolids in the country to other states. So it is basically a bit of a nuisance of how you deal with it. Current methodologies take the landfills. That creates a lot of odors, creates a lot of methane emissions. Methane emissions are 23 times the impact of CO2 in the atmosphere. Local incinerators like New Glens Falls, Logan County incinerator here, both closed down in 2016. All that material is going to landfills today. Other incinerators in the Albany area are slated for being removed in the near future. Incineration is basically burning the solids and combusting the solids, and that creates a lot of nitrous oxide and other emissions, and tends to be very taxing. Nationwide, we're being phased out right now. So, not only is this region constrained disposal today, but it's going to get a lot worse. And we're looking to come in and do something that's environmentally carbon negative. And that it benefits being negative is positive in this sense. Because we're actually benefiting, reducing carbon emissions and greenhouse gas emissions materially. But our product that I've given each of you a sample here today is really amazing in itself. I've also been involved in agriculture quite a bit in my life. And you know, what we've seen in the past 75 years is soil degradation. And how can we be sure? Well, you see the algae in your ponds, you see the algae in the riverways, you see the Chesapeake Bay, you see a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico the size of New Jersey. We have some real problems with how we're treating soils. This product is revolutionary. Chemical fertilizers are bound by salt. Salt is corrosive. We all know that. But we load our soils with it. This takes the same nutrients biologically, fixes them together with carbon, which you can ask any farmer, what do you want? You want higher soil carbon. That improves the ability of the soil to retain moisture. It improves the ability of the soil to reduce nutrient runoff, which is causing these problems downstream. We're in the watershed right here of the Chesapeake Bay. What's happening here affects everything downstream. Where are we? In the Hudson?
We're in the Hudson. We're not in the Chesapeake Bay here.
Okay. Well, the watershed, I think, in the Hudson area, yeah. Goes south.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you see there's all kinds of polluted waterways here, ponds that are algae covered. That's not natural. We've come accustomed to it, you know, it's not natural. That's a sign of nutrient runoff. Too much nutrients get in the water, causing algae blossoms, and those have been linked to many degenerative neurological diseases. So we
proverbially kill a lot of birds with one stone. And we're also looking to solve other problems at the county level, but predominantly biosolids is what we're focused on, but we can take biomass as well, like biomass and other types. The biosolids feedstock that we're focused on is the byproduct of publicly known treatment works, wastewater treatment plants. It's the solids that are left over after the treatment process, after anaerobic and aerobic digestion, 80% of which is aerobic today in New York. And that's the material we're going to receive and recycle. The DEC has what we call a beneficial use determination. We qualify for that. Because we're beneficially using that material instead of just throwing it away. What's even more interesting is we're avoiding those emissions that if we put in a landfill, if we put it on fields, if we let it decay, it'll emit a lot of methane. We take it to the incinerator, it'll make NOx, nitrous oxide. Nitrous oxide is 300 times the coefficient of carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. So we are avoiding all kinds of emissions in this process by treating it properly and reusing it, recycling our biosolids that we all generate, and we found a better use of it. It's an ideal feedstock for us because it's coming from public treatment. It's very consistent. It's both a source of energy in our process as well as a product at the output. And right now, about 68% of biosolids in the state of New York are landfills. Many of those can be exported to landfills in other states. It often gets a train ticket, and it goes as far as Colorado, Texas, Georgia. You'd be amazed at where this stuff goes. And there have been some salt trains and some issues, and they usually don't last long because when you start putting in landfills, it decays and causes issues. You're limited to about 10% of daily input into a landfill. If you exceed that, you start having issues. So for us, we're really trying to boost right now 16% or so is recycled. A lot of the recycling efforts, composting, land application, these things are actually contributing to the spread of contaminants that are in this material. Things like PFAS, the forever compounds you've heard of from the Department of Agriculture, they're in this material. They're in all of us. And we keep putting it back in the food supply. We keep disposing of it. We keep spreading it. We can only treat it. Right now, the majority of biosolids in the state of New York travel through the New York Freeway. We happen to be a strategic location for a lot of that. Our long partners here, Casella Organics, manages quite a bit of material locally and regionally that we can bring into this facility and offset disposal. So this is green infrastructure. This is what it looks like. This is recycling material that we've just been treating as trash, and it's been to our dumpster. You have a question?
No.
Okay. Feel free to interrupt me. Our manufacturing method is thermal treatment, reading over 125 years of experience. I actually got to correct that. Our manufacturer has over 140 years of experience in this field. This is nothing new in that respect. And from that perspective, we have performance and emission guarantee for the manufacturer that we'll be employed with. We're basically using a lot of these components that are readily available. Nothing really has been specialized. It's just a unique configuration. I'll go talk from this just to get the site layout, and we can get to the building in a minute, a little bit in reverse order. So the building here in the process is about 10,000 square feet. What's the preceding building here? We take odor management very seriously. that that's obviously a big concern with this material.
All trucks, and Caselli can verify this, maybe we would speak on the, how trucks, how it's transported.
Well, that's known as Patrick Ellis with Casella.
Your
name, Patrick Ellis. I can leave my card as well. So we manage about 450,000 tons of municipal biosolids each year. We operate a network of landfills, as Bryce noted. We also have some of those recycling facilities. We've been very interested in increasing our recycling portion of this material. And at the same time, because we've been having a lot of water issues at our landfills, we've worked very cooperatively with our customers, including Saratoga County. We manage all of the sludge from the Saratoga County Sewer District number one, to install odor control systems to try to treat the materials so that there are no odors during transport or during acceptance at the facility. All of our trucks are covered. We do everything we can to use a thicker cover that can be sealed down and essentially encloses the trailer of the system like you might see from a gravel pit, like a mesh kind of a liner. This is a rigid plastic tarping system that helps kind of cover things up and make certain that we're not causing any issues when we're bringing the materials to wherever we're going. In this case, hopefully to this facility here.
The trucks are all regulated. You have to have aligners, you have to cover your own spillers, you also need control odors. When they come to our facility, they're first weighed in, the weigh seal here in front of the office. Weighed in and under constant video and audio contact with the drivers. They pull around the building here on the back side, purpose unknown, and back into the indoor receiving bays. We have two bays. In case any problem has with one, we have a second bay. Just in case. Fastening the garage doors come down, open up and come down when the truck's injured. They close while they're unloading, just to prevent any future debugers from escaping. And they dump into some grates right here before to catch, just for safety, and also just to catch something maybe like a motor or something big out of the bin, something that's getting thrown into the bins to catch it here for safety, just to make sure it doesn't get into our system. All this is inside of a building. 45 feet high internally, and it's designed just for odors, maybe. It wasn't for odors, I just, a lot of utilities off to the control. But the entire pit is underground, and it's all under negative pressure. Our drying system and our reaction system all require combustion air coming into them. And so that creates a negative pressure to the entire facility, which keeps odors coming in and that air coming in from the open.
So what is the nature of the biosolid itself? Is it in a liquid form? Is it solid or is it dried already?
We receive it as a cake. After the pelvic bin treatment, where it dewaters the material, the minimum we can take is about 18% solid, so that would be 82% water, but it still cannot pass, it still has to be that or above, just so it doesn't have any drip or anything from the trucks. So all the trucks are sealed, and none of this escapes because of the way the trucks are designed.
So it's 82% water, 18%?
That's the low, that's the minimum solids content, so 82% water, 18% solids. The average in the area is about 23% solids. That's what we anticipate. About 20% anaerobically digested, 80% aerobically digested.
Mm-hmm.
That's make a little bit of difference here and there.
So this is just that for my own edification. Is it like wood and brush and stuff that you break down into carbon, or how does it? It's just from the treatment plants.
It's just from the wastewater treatment plants. And we also have a. On the side here, this is more of a phase two. We look to bring in potentially some wood waste and some other waste materials, like solid materials that we can blend with it. A lot of that's just to assist with local community and kind of disposal of environments, but we can take in that kind of input as well. That's more of a phase two. We're talking about just purely the biosolids and purely focused on that. But the permit would encompass additional wood waste, which we receive mainly in ship form.
Now, will you be monitoring that biosolid feedstock for its composition on a regular basis?
Well, every generator, every publicly owned treatment, wastewater treatment plant, has to get it tested regularly. At the very minimum, quarterly, larger plants more frequently. So we'll get those reports. We'll also test for moisture, do our own analysis internally. The effort we have there is really to try to manage the delivery so we get a consistent feedstock in each one. Every plant's going to be a little different, so we'll mix them and put them in each bay depending on what we need in that bay. We try to hit that 23% average for in, and that's really just coordinating deliveries to solid.
Okay.
So we're trying to average that one.
You mentioned that. You said the trucks are all regular.
Yeah.
By whom?
Andrew, would you like to answer that question?
Yeah, Andrew Molstow of Sterling, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the sludge leaving the wastewater treatment plants that have to be regulated under the Part 364 with the Department of Environmental Conservation.
DEC.
Okay. So each truck that hauls this material in New York State has to have a Part 364 permit that lists the outlet that it's bringing the material to. So once the facility is fully permitted, we would have our subcontractors add this facility as an approved outlet. And so there is that level of regulation by the state of those trucks being registered and tracked where they're going to be going.
How often are they checked? Is it an annual inspection by DEC or quarterly, semi-annual? How's that done?
The actual inspections on the vehicle are by DOT. There can be spot checks, but they do have to be checked at the very least on an annual basis.
Okay.
And I would just add that one of the DEC requirements for an operating facility, this one or other ones I've received, when they come into the scale house, the first thing that the scale operator would do would check that the truck has a valid 364 permit before they're allowed to come onto the facility.
Okay.
So is this going to be just one hauler from one site specifically, or
it'll be regional multiple treatment plants?
I guess it'll be coming from all around.
Predominantly under one trucker coming into the site making one hauler for every, from Highway 9 to 197. You have to help me with it.
Yeah,
that's a number of roads. What's the other segment? It's
four networks.
What if somebody else from not Sarasota County, from Warren County, or Washington County?
So
you're going to accept that?
As a biosolids management company, we'll be the ones contracting with the municipal entities to manage the municipal biosolids, and then we will be contracting with Sarasota Biochar to provide the material to them. So we'll be responsible for managing the relationship at the point of generation, providing the equipment to receive the material, making sure that it's treated, covered up, and then we manage the transportation to the site.
Okay, good. Thank you. That answers your question.
I'm here for a reason.
This process develops. Right? I've been following the biochar process for a while. This is the first time I've ever seen it listed as a fertilizer.
So
what's the nutrient profile of the finished product that you're cooking?
It'll vary. It tends to be high in phosphorus, low in potassium, about 3.9 or 3.10 MPK.
Okay.
It's
more carbon source than a fertilizer. So.
It's a little bit of each. It's a good, you can blend it with other fertilizers like urea here in the farming. It's a good additive. But what it also does is carbon, if you blend something like urea with it, which is a little nitrogen fertilizer, it'll capture it in the rainfall and then slowly release it. So it's really kind of it has an interesting effect on other fertilizers that actually reduce fertilizer use.
Well, this is why I'm asking, is I've heard of this product being called soil amendment. And I've heard it as a fertilizer supplement. It's a device that they use to control the release of nitrogen. Because carbon will tie to nitrogen in the soil.
The difference here is probably everything you've read about biochar has been based on woody biomass.
No.
that you would...
No, actually, everything I've read on biochar is based on moving away from land application and municipal.
Okay. Well, you're unique then.
So, I was just curious if there was something in your process, because I see you're using natural gas. I'm assuming that's only for the drying process. That's not...
It's actually not for the drying process, it's for our reaction process.
Okay.
But it's very minimal use.
But it's not adding nitrogen to the nutrient profile.
No.
So you list 50, potential of up to 50 trucks. Is that 50 trucks bringing in source material, or is that 50 trucks bringing in source material and the trucks that are leaving the finished product? That's total.
That's total. Okay. We have about a 10-to-1 reduction in what we bring in to what goes out, by the way. But that also accounts, so it's about 15 trucks per phase. We have three-phase development over time. We'll start with one phase, so it'll be about 15 trucks related to the incoming and outgoing materials, another 5 trucks just for services. We do require for our system, we use sulfuric acid for our remediation system for ammonia. Out of that, we make ammonium sulfate, which is blend back in the fertilizer. That's a little bit extra nitrogen.
Right.
So, and that's something that's...
But that's from your scrub.
That's from our scrubbing process, yes. The wet scrubbing process. It's actually more important in Europe. It's pretty state-of-the-art.
We don't have enough ammonium sulfate from our local scrubbers.
The system itself, the odor control system, is I'd say, about as good as it gets. Right. I haven't seen anything better for a facility like this. There's a lot of biosolids dryers throughout the country, located often in downtown areas, like Milwaukee has one right downtown. You've got several throughout the East Coast here in cities. I mean, this is not uncommon. And in fact, our only real emission source is from the drying process. The reaction we do, we basically burn all the gases generated for heat in the process to heat the dryer. So where a dryer this size might take 30 MMBtu of gas, we're running about 2 cubic gas. So we're a massive, over 90% reduction.
I saw somewhere, and I haven't been able to find it, and I looked at your literature late in the evening, so I might be just reading this, but I thought somewhere a carbon bagging area.
Yeah.
Is this going out in, when you say bagging, you're not talking about like 25 pound bag, you're talking about
100,000 pounds. Yeah, 1 cubic yard per bag is really the size we're looking to do, maybe half a cubic yard. 1 or 2 cubic yards per bag, actually, in size. So it's still industrial.
Sit-tons.
Yeah, tons.
When you say 16 trucks per phase,
15. Plus the 5 contingency ports.
But when you say a truck, I just want to make sure I understand. A truck comes in, dumps, then leaves.
Yeah,
it's one truck.
Yep.
Okay.
Or if it's coming for a final product, it comes in, fills up, leaves.
And leaves. Right.
About
okay.
2 to 3 a day per load, per base,
taking
of the material one out.
Yep.
It's lighter, it's higher volume. And about 12 coming in.
I want to make sure I understand. It's not necessarily trips. It's a truck, and it's got to do the pull. So, okay. I just want to make sure I'm understanding.
Okay. I want to make sure we're on the same page.
So you're looking at your ideal situation is a 20 to 22% dry matter of the material coming in.
23% or above.
Are you planning on releasing any of the liquid that you're taking out of that product to release it into the sewer system, or is it all handled within the process of your...
The only liquids we discharge from the air treatment system.
It's so a what?
From the air treatment system.
Okay.
Everything else is dehydration in our process and thermal treatment. So the incoming liquids are completely...
So it's not going out as a liquid form, it's going out as a gas form.
Predominantly the major emission we have is
water.
Water. Particulates. We also have the DEC particulate emissions. That's easily handled. That's at the first stage of our treatment system. Then we do ammonia cleansing, and then we use a bioscoper, which is the tower type, 2-stage, 2 beds, that treats the remaining odors, H2S, HERC cavities, etc. And then we also do any surplus process heat we add to the stack at the end just for dispersion. We lift it up.
So that liquid you're talking about that would be going into the sewer would be from the liquid that's condensed.
It'll have maybe the particulate matter in it, possibly some ammonium sulfate, minor amount. We're going to recycle most of that into the product. Has values for fertilizer.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact we're doing such a nice job of scrubbing the acid out of our rain that now I have to buy it to put it on my soil.
The source is what?
That's right, the source is electric-generating plants in the Midwest.
We're trying to get out of it.
I'm not complaining about it.
True market margin system.
So the growth with this product, you can also reduce your level of compounds. I mean, if you notice anything in farming, you just use more and more to make the same result.
Yeah, it's trying to make sure that down is protected. It creates an incoming traffic.
But back to the question, is the soil limits of fertilizer? Most sources of carbon, biochar today don't have nutrients in them and are purely considered soil limited because they have no nutrient value. We have some nutrient value, and we can, by law, we have to declare a minimum value. So in every state, we sell it. So
that NPK number again?
3, 10, 1.
Okay.
The phosphorus is uniquely stable. I mean, there's a lot of issues with phosphorus leaching from soil stays, predominantly because there's very little carbon holding in there. The carbon actually holds the carbon, or holds the phosphorus and slows the release of it, making it available to plants. So the carbon aspect will be consumed by plants as well. Otherwise, you would have a 1,000-year shelf life in the soil.
So who,
about 30-40% carbon.
Who are your end users? Who are the buyers of this product then?
Mainly farmers and agricultural sector, greenhouse producers, composters. I work with some composters in the Midwest. It literally helps to speed up the fungal growth. Almost half the time it takes to compost material. Predominantly, it would be in the agricultural sector, into farmers locally. We hope to make a local impact on waterways through that venue. As we grow, we might look to export to the Midwest and other areas. It's also desperately needed in the Midwest. I'm actually from Kansas City here today, and coming from an agricultural family, it's Western Kansas is desperately needed. And there are many other areas of the country. So we're hoping to make it more of a national problem.
It's not a concern out there, so.
Oh. So the cities are in?
My sister's a leader in South Village.
Okay.
Yes. I saw that. It's going
to be in Liverpool. You're lucky you can see.
So your facility is not looking to utilize the at the moment not used rail net. A rail line or spur that comes into it?
Not immediately, but that could become useful later on, particularly when we get to three phases and we're producing more carbon, or we might look at exporting to rail at that point. We could also look at rail when we move biosolids from rail. That's a future possibility right now. It's not in the plan.
The industrial park. Knowledge doesn't have, it's not like a PUD, it's just a tract of land that is intended for industrial purposes, but zoning wise it's not.
It was pre-planned to some extent, but not as a PUD per se.
And we could, in theory, make every phase go through site plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would anticipate that this would be a phase one only approval. And they are combining two lots under their proposal.
Is that part of this?
Yeah, it's not an involved process, but it is combining two lots.
The reason for going for three phases is initially is more on the EC side, okay. So we don't have three
that long. Yeah, I guess that's one of my main questions and doesn't have the answer tonight, but there's so many agencies and the DEC itself, I don't mean anything for us to declare a lead agency. Get an idea of what divisions of each agency has handled in this.
On the DC, there's two divisions, solid waste handling permit will require an air permit. But also stormwater prevention, stormwater plan as well. And
is there a DOH?
I think so. No.
A DOH? DOT with the trucks.
That's our opinion. There are limits that. It's really just come down to.
So there. We have an annual monitoring.
I don't think they're 500 feet.
And then how are their air permits work?
Yep, so for the air permit, we'll have, part of the air permit application, it'll have some dispersion modeling for the emissions that are expected from the process based on the controls. And then the permit that gets written by DEC will have in there any type of monitoring requirements that they impose on the facility. So if particulates and odorous compounds are the primary compounds of concern to be emitted, and they may require an annual stat test to be performed. That's part of the permit compliance. And typically the way that those work is that if you show compliance after a certain number of times, you can petition for waivers for a year, or go from annual monitoring to every 2 years based on your compliance history. But the permit will have in their specific monitoring requirements.
And for the consultants the treatment plant down in mechanical rate. So say you guys are sold and you become something international company.
I think they're in speed three, but
does your process change, like when you go back in front of the city, do you have an annual program?
So our contract is with the county, okay. And that's a contract that we won via a public bid. The majority of our municipal biosolids were won via bid, just by the nature of its municipal entity. It used to be that very long-term contracts were common. These days, that's not really the case. Most facilities put a contract up every 3, perhaps as long as 5 years. So we have our part of this relationship is to supply the facility. We know that we have that contract today. We may not have it 5 or 6 years from now. It doesn't change our obligation to Ray and Bryce to supply material. We'll have to get it from somewhere else, and that's our obligation. So that's why we're not permitting for a single source. We're really looking to have multiple sources of material approved. And in particular, if phase 2, phase 3 were to happen, there are a few treatment plants that make that much material. Our hope is to be able to be a local resource and manage material locally and help keep costs down by not having to haul it all the way out of our landfills in Western Europe. But if, for whatever reason, say today, Washington County, they're composting their material and they're pretty content with that, if they don't want to do that, then we're going to look beyond the immediate area to find sources.
I mentioned the city because I didn't know if they have certain parameters on trucks that they move to you regularly, or conversely, if we have conditions that we want to adhere to, if they can't go out the road sometimes.
So,
and the hauler changes, where does that end up?
Yeah, so each plant typically has their own set of concerns around that. Some are located on state roads where there's not a lot of concerns about that traffic, but there are others where there's a very prescribed truck route that we have to follow to go from that state road to the treatment plant. We're aware of that. We contract with the community, and we work with, we don't own the trucks that do this work. We do subcontract that out, but it's only with a handful of companies that we've selected because of the service that they provide and the quality of their equipment. They're going to be aware of that requirement as well. Same thing holds true at our facilities. We don't want trucks going through the neighborhood on their way to our facility. We tell them which route they need to go. We also tell them what time they need to be there. So we're not going to have trucks idling out on the public road waiting to get in the facility. They know the hours of acceptance as will be set up by the permit, and we'll make sure that they're there when they hear those operating numbers.
Okay.
We do have a truck route now that goes in and out of our public park. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
We are.
You are.
Yeah, and we've been discussing that. We don't have any issues with that truck route, so we'll incorporate that with our
home. Seems to work. And I'm stay away from the schools and all that.
And
then,
we're going to the park.
So, I don't have the street names right in my head, but this gives you the
truck route that you took a look at. Right by here, Route 9, 197.
Right.
See, I think it would be a good idea as part of your next submission to have a map demonstrating or illustrating the truck route.
We can have one here.
Yeah, but I haven't seen it in the submitted materials. So, just to try.
If any issue, the beauty of our relationship, we have one number of calls.
Just to try and put this into some scale, like for example, the Glens Falls wastewater treatment plant. You know, what is the treatment of that facility in a given day? You know, and what is the need for your feedstock? So how many plants does it take to feed your requirement for phase one?
So every plant is a little bit different.
Right, understanding it, yeah.
All custom built. So it really depends upon the population base that it serves, that drives how much material they make, and then what type of process. So the anaerobic digestion that Bryce mentioned, that actually reduces the volume of the sludge that's being produced that has to leave the facility. So the Saratoga County facility, that's producing around 30,000 tons a year, right? And the Glens Falls facility is producing, is that 10?
Around 12, I think. I think they're averaging about 12,000 tons per year.
12,000 tons per year. So
just to, if I may, sorry, I'm Jeremy Tenson, Costello. The 30,000 tons a year looks like 2 to 3 tractor trailer loads a day. Right?
Okay.
65-yard dump trailers.
Right, so those 15 loads, it's probably going to come from probably not fewer than 5 different facilities. Really, the Saratoga County facility is on the large side. If you take a look at there's a small treatment plant for Lake George or the Washington County Sewer District, they're only producing a few thousand tons of material a year. So we'll be managing lots of different facilities. There'll be each facility will have to be approved into the facility. That's the way it works at our own beneficiaries facility up in Chattagay. So each one will have to present kind of a comprehensive set of analyses that's taken over time to demonstrate consistency that meets the requirements for processing the facility and as any conditions of the permit that the safety issue. So it's going to be not less than 5 per phase that would be going there, would be my guess. Could be quite a few more than that if we end up working with some of the small facilities.
Just put that in context. Each line is 75,000 tons a year.
Okay.
So at least 4 or 5 plants can service with each one. So you see, you can, in a small footprint, we can do quite a bit.
I have a question on your EAF, and this might be for council. You're talking about phases 1, 2, and 3, and then phase 1. Is your EAF for just the phase 1? I'm concerned a little about segmentation when you're asking about that, and I don't know if you want to speak to that.
The EAF is for the full pre-phase build-out.
It is for the full?
Yeah, because the intent is to go for DEC permits for the full 3 phases.
That's what I thought, so,
yeah.
Okay.
We'd rather do that once.
Yeah, and it's important to understand that the DEC permitting process presupposes that there's a pending application.
Right.
And a lead agency.
Right.
And so it's important for us to have a common understanding here that we have an unlisted action. There's some involved agencies that should be notified of the application. We are requesting that the planning board take lead agency status for purposes of the coordinated review.
Thank you.
Within that, we would expect approval to be done after receiving DEC permit.
Right, but you're looking just for lead agency tonight, and that's
yeah, that's important because the DAC process presupposes
right.
that we have done this and we're proceeding.
Right.
We received various feedback from the zoning board here, and I think we'll definitely appropriate that and come back in a month with more final designs and everything else and plan the site layout. Finalizing this, we've shown some updates in the presentation this year, the last month.
Okay, thank you.
That'll include lighting, stormwater, the air conditioning cover. We appreciate your review of that.
So, your presentation included a sourcing of wood sources. And you're mentioning different phases, and one phase would be the wood area. You're going to have a wood source right from the start, right?
No.
Part of the process. Normal, just municipal.
Unless it's needed right from that, unless it's absolutely required, we don't really need to start.
Not requiring anything. I'm just trying to understand what we've got. What would be, if you did move on to the phase with the wood source, what would be the wood types that you'd be sourcing? What is that?
Mainly from municipalities. Trees that fall, storm, chip them up, get rid of them. Instead of taking the land.
But you wouldn't be processing them on site. They would come in as a chip form.
We'll be set up to receive chip. We'll be set up to receive chip form.
Right. We'll have a chipper on site.
We would in phase two, yes, we would have a regrind and get the particle size down. But again, you see the particle size that we've got in the carbon, that's what we've got to get to with wood. Maybe get to the dry fertilizer product.
So is your wood process all mechanical or is there any sort of a digestion?
It's all pyrolytic, we call it. There's mechanical, it's basically kilns and dryers. And then the air treatment associated with it. One of the three things is our reaction process, so we let the kiln bake the material, which powers the dryer, which results in a no-difference air stream that we treat with the advanced system. So it's really three parts.
Just asking, you're not looking to get this down to a fibers level.
Like yeah, or it can be blended with other fertilizers.
No.
You're in the wood. You're that's why I asked about mechanical.
It would just be a mechanical.
It's remarkably consistent.
Yeah. First of all, we're coming in, we take it through a regrind, and the hammer knows what it's all about. Ideally, we just
take it through. It's a wonderful thing. It could be against
so this. I ask because it's all different. Like we had a project in front of us a number of years back. They were planning on taking trees, old trees, debarking them, and then putting them through the grinder.
That's a
different process than taking wood chips and running them through a hammer mill and pulverizing them.
Yeah. We're not set up for the whole tree, but we can take in the trip. A lot of that's done by mobile grinders anyway. It takes to a site, from the wood, and move the grinder.
I tried to do that and made reference to their application.
Full chips. Anything from curbside, we can take that as well.
Do you have any plants operating currently or under construction?
We don't. This would be our first plant that we're constructing. But, I guess the. I was just going to say, our manufacturer is offering performance and emission guarantee, and our air treatment system also gives us an odor guarantee. So,
those systems are tried. You're just putting them together.
We're just putting them together. Nobody's putting them together. Mm-hmm. All the pieces are out there. We're just putting them together. If you take wood chips from like mobile as it takes trees on, sure, that would all day long. So that would not be a problem.
Could be your three guys bringing stuff in. We could take grass clippings. We could take all that stuff. What kind of commercial truck people? Mm-hmm.
We should probably add, just full disclosure, with the woody biomass, we also have the opportunity to take in things like chipped pallets that are no longer usable and dry paper. As a matter of fact, Casella has a fair amount of that in their, in their chain, which maybe you'd like to comment on, Patrick. So it would be two other types of, woody type material that we bring in.
But we're keeping exclusively biophonic in terms of what we brought.
So when you talk about bringing in those other things, the products, does that all come through Casella?
That would be separate. We look to work with the town and kind of, you know, extras that they like here. It's not in phase one just because that's something we intend to sort out, you know, over time. And it's not necessary. It's an added service we can do. It's absolutely not necessary or essential for our operations. Which, by the way, we are considered essential to this place. So,
I mean, I understand that this seems like there's a lot of regulation and control up there. So, we work our way into this, you know, woody biomass. And
it's
a picture of John coming up and pick up for everything.
Other animal manures would be great fertilizer. We can, you know, these are lean and diverse bodies. We're focused purely on biosolids, looking to supplement it with some wood over time as needed. But that's a thing.
How many jobs will this create?
The full three lines will create at least 20 jobs. Two lines at least 16, and minimum of 13.
Okay.
Both will create from three different phases, you know, phase B and the north and the east. Total about 20.
Okay.
Will be all three lines operating.
How about the initial building? Putting up the structure, you're going to create a lot of jobs there.
Yeah, it'll be a construction process about 6 months. I guess when you talk about construction, you say what you'd like to see. six months we're anticipating the construction to be.
Plus
the contingencies. So,
can you talk about the truck washing?
Your attempt at noise control?
All the motors will be inside of it.
Yeah, I heard that you got a chip that they aren't quiet.
Well, that's phase two, and that would be in a wood grinding building.
The whole thing, I'm going to get it all on the table.
Yeah, well, that would be in its own building and inside the building. We would just be conveying material into the building. Again, it's a chip, we're going to put it on a conveyor, run it inside the building. That can be insulated for sound. It'd be an electric grinder versus a diesel grinder. A big difference in decibels. Coming from it. But yeah, they are noisy, but that would be in its own. Right here, we can start a separate enclosure, kind of a woodshed, if you will. It would just be there for the grinders. We got about 3,000 square feet from that. We're planning on to have up to two to three grinding stages, depending on what's needed, and we'll knock it down the size.
That could be set up in the same style as your phase one. Delivery or vehicles come in, doors close.
Well, it would just be stored out under roof.
Bryce, I would add that as part of the DEC application, they do require a noise assessment, where on paper you have to, based on the equipment, the decibel levels, accounting for no other engineering controls like walls, you project what those noise levels will be at the property line, help guide what type of walls you might need for the building, and any type of buffering that you might need. And then the permit that gets issued by DEC has an annual noise study requiring you to take actual physical noise measurements at property lines to demonstrate compliance with set established noise levels based on the population of the area at the property line.
All this equipment can operate outside of the wood. The whole purpose of enclosure is to enclose both noise and odor. And so we build a building around it just specifically for that purpose.
Can you just move about parking for alternate phases then?
We only need to have 16, 20 people. I believe the parking will be expanded a little bit for bridges and whatnot. We'll have more spaces than we anticipated, but that would be our final site plan. We'll ensure what we have. And you know, the required space we kind of have, what we're asking for.
Yeah, I think we looked at that with Studio A also, is that the town zoning requirement for this type of use seems a little excessive because it's based on square footage. Based on, you know, square footage of the building size, Whereas when you look at it based on the actual number of employees, that would be, you know, it's not a retail place where custom, you know, visitors come and things like that. It's an employee, a couple visitor spots. So there may be a request for a reduction in that threshold just based on the town requirement for minimum parking for this type of use.
Can you talk about the truck wash?
Yeah, sure. You had the truck wash. Oh, sorry.
Go for it.
Okay. Truck wash is there. Just we'll set up inside the receiving building here where the truck's back in. And the idea there is if there's any material on the trucks, tires, anything like that, we'll wash it off before it leaves the facility to make sure they've been clean.
Okay.
We don't want to run into any issues, but somebody's just going to have their caution. So nobody knows what, even what the trucks are for, really. Just keep it clean. That's the main thing.
So it'll be right there at the
right at
the discharge point.
Yeah, right at the discharge point. That's what they do. Once they discharge, inspect the vehicles, and then an operator will supervise the unloading. And we'll have on each side of this, we'll have spray hoses so we can keep the truck from each side. And, you know, there's an issue with it. We just want to leave it clean and be responsible about it.
So that's just a manual thing that you're doing.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's just to make sure it's going. We try to take every precaution we can to make sure we're taking one.
Okay. Sorry.
Counselor?
Yes, sir.
Do we have an authority to waive the town requirement on the parking space?
I don't think you want to waive that right now.
No. But basically asking for, do we have, or do we send the zoning name to the set of rules?
I would have to look at that, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can look at it and let you know, but I don't think you're looking for that tonight.
We're going to get into it. The only thing we're really interested in today is just getting started with AC, because that's, this is the most conservative environmental.
I think I'm going to
agency.
Yeah, I'm out of parking, like, see.
We're in for a little bit of a rise.
They ghosted in extra spaces. As long as they have the area on the site for it, they can waive it and not get a variance.
Do we have a agreed upon expectation as to what the involved agencies would be? Obviously, DEC and DOT. Saratoga County.
Oh, you said no DOH? There's not water? You don't need anything for.
There is now because of the sewage. There is water already set up for the park. As far as, so we reviewed a lot of the stuff from the early to mid 90s when it was originally put in there. So there's water and sewer already there. My understanding is that we're just tapping into the existing line, so there's really not a lot of DOH coordination at that point.
Okay.
Supplies already there.
Okay. City of Glens Falls.
City of Glens Falls. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
County
NDA
vote.
County
NDA.
City of Glens Falls.
City of Glens Falls.
Yeah, City of Glens Falls.
The bill was received any wastewater.
So far I have 1, 2, 3. 4, 5 involved agencies.
Which is DEC?
I have DEC, DOT, Saratoga County, in terms of the planning board, Saratoga County IDA, and City of Glens Falls.
What's the DOT for?
The permitting on the trucks.
Okay, thank you.
There wouldn't be an involved agency for this project because they won't be issuing any specific approval for this project.
It would be
interesting.
It could be an interesting
agency.
Okay. Better safe than sorry on this list.
Right.
Usually you do the lead agent request by resolution.
I'll make a motion to start coordinating review or lead agency
to declare lead agency status.
Declare lead agency status. Seeker.
Motion has been made to confer the planning board and county role as lead agency for Timber Biochar Solutions Environmental Assessment Review. So, do I have a second?
I'll second.
Yeah. Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? This now, this will cover it. It's not too controversial. Yeah.
Aye.
Opposed? Extension. Motion carries.
All right, so I will send out that letter tomorrow.
I don't think so from the way I look at it. I think we'll send this EAF with them.
Yeah, so I'll definitely send the part one with the letter, but I didn't come across any corrections or revisions as a result of the discussion tonight. Yes, they got that. Now, just on the air emissions permit, do you foresee that being a concurrent process with our review, or is it linear, or how are you?
We'll be submitting the DEC application.
Yeah, the DEC applications, they include the detail from the site plan. So once the site plan is to a state, that's able to be submitted as the complete package to the planning board. That would be the timing that we're submitting the permit applications to the DEC. And they need their permit applications submitted concurrently, so they need to take both the air and solid waste at the same time.
So they don't do that till we don't see her.
Well, they'll take it. They won't officially call it a complete application and start timelines until SEAKER is complete.
Right. Oh.
Right, which then sometimes we have to reopen the SEAKER.
Right.
And there's a 30-day period for other agencies to say that.
Do they expect any kind of local approval for the, or they just need to have SEAKER complete?
They need to have the negative declaration for their application to be considered complete. Right. They don't need the actual site plan approved. Okay. They need SEAKER completed.
And is LaBerge our only third-party engineer?
LaBerge only does your SWIP. LaBerge is contracts independently for other. They are a TDE, but they contract independently.
So if you wanted to have another, third-party review for like an air emissions specialty or something like that, you could certainly do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your
time. Very informative.
For the minute.
Yep.
Thank you
for helping us get this.
Oh, sure, sure.
Misunderstand your process. Appreciate
it. No, this is neat stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Interesting product. Thank you very much. Thank you.
What's all the cards? I'll tell you.
That's enough probably for just a small potted planter. I've been using my lawn and garden for a long time. It totally increases resiliency.
Should it be called Miracle-Gro? Is that what it is?
That's already taken.
It's grow with a W.
Carbon fertilizer is not. We can claim the whole commodity.
Okay. Well, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
That was very informative.
Thank you. Let me know if you have any other questions. Appreciate the chat.
Yep. Sure.
And we'll cover all that.
Our process, we just try and be thorough and We're not pro or con. We just want to make sure it's, you know, we've got their questions answered.
I know there's going to be a lot of questions because it's something new and different.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep doing the same thing, though. You know, it's a
question. Thanks again.
All right, folks, if we could, we still have a couple more things. Thank you.
Yeah, as the board recalls, we extended the agenda for a couple items. The first I had was the Jacoby subdivision, and then there will be a Baker Falls item as well, Baker Falls Solar. Yeah. So that's the formal agenda, so now we got Jacoby's. Okay, where's my notes? What did I do with my notes? Okay, the two primary items relating to the Jacoby Farm subdivision from the July meeting a couple weeks ago was the outstanding comments relating to the SWIP letter from LaBerge and the road repair issue in terms of the process to, or the negotiation relating to an amount of money to be set aside for the road repair. So since the last meeting, there's been a lot of advancement on the SWIP issue. We did get a response letter from EDP, the applicant's agent. It seemed to be a point-by-point, you know, presentation of responses to each individual comment from LaBerge. Then we quickly got a letter from LaBerge saying that they needed some more funds to be deposited for their review to continue, and those funds were immediately delivered this morning. And then we immediately got a response again from LaBerge saying they're going to start their review right away and try and get their comments back as soon as they can. So that's where it stands. I think, you know, we're finally getting some wind at our back here and on that issue. No, we do not. They just started their review. I think at some point today, mid-morning, early afternoon, they started.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I think the information from LaBerge that you're waiting for, you don't need to have all of their comments and full approval on the SWIP to do a preliminary. I just want the board to know you're waiting for comments, but that's for the final. You don't need that to grant preliminary.
We do have by getting more variance. They don't find the plant, there's no butterflies, they didn't find the plant. What's interesting here with Fish and Wildlife is we don't have a federal nexus to even say that they made the process. But usually, if you're not getting a federal permit, you don't have to consult the Fish and Wildlife. So it's rounded out.
When we did our initial site analysis, we did our environmental assessment form that says there may be caribou, butterflies, and Indiana bats in your property. That's basically the entire county that we live in. We immediately went out there several months ago, had our wildlife specialists go out off the site. There's no habitat on the property for caribou. There's no habitat on the property for Indian bats. Put a memo in the file, that's where it ends. We have no federal permitting required for this project, so therefore we've never gone and obtained a final sign-off. Your town engineer, in their letter, included a note that we identified there was potential, GIS identified that there was potential for those species. We responded with our memo that we put in our file and said we will go and obtain that letter of sign-off from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service if they will entertain it, because we have no federal permit. One of the questions they actually have on their submission is, why are you submitting to get a sign-off? What federal permits are involved? We have no federal permits. We typically would never take this step. We did decide to take it just because it wasn't the comment letter. Just to close the loop, we've been on site. There's no trees. There's no bat habitat. There's no open sandy fields. There's no nectar species on site. There's no habitat.
I tend to think Joe's correct. I think the very first Carner Blue review after it was determined to be an endangered species at the Hudson Point PUD in Queensbury. I know that little creature very well. I tend to think that it's not here. But usually, like I said in my comment, in the email, we usually just close this loop by getting the jurisdictional agency to sign off. I don't think this is an issue. But I'd like to close the loop, have the letter from Fish and Wildlife saying, we accept your analysis, there's no habitat. And that closes the file. But I don't have that yet. That's all I'm saying.
Right, and I say, we're trying to obtain that letter. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has no obligation to actually respond to us and give us that letter. They are not.
Yeah.
Unless we have a federal permit pending, which we have no federal permit.
Right.
So they have no time clock. And when they see that they have no time clock, they may take it, just shove it in a pile, or we may get a letter. I can't guarantee that, but we are trying to pursue it just to close the loop, even though we don't need it for any permitting anywhere other than to...
No, the field investigation was obviously done in earnest. I accept the conclusion from that. That's what I'm saying. But I just want... It'd be nice, for the record, just to have that, letter.
Do you have Robin's contact? Robin,
yes. We submitted everything, and they said we received it.
Yeah.
And then they asked why we're submitting it. And we said, the town bureau wants a sign-off letter. And they said, okay.
Well, no, the reason why you submitted it is because your system said that it might be here.
it's definitely a circular...
Yeah, exactly.
...circular pattern.
So is it something you know we don't need?
I think the issue is closed. I would like to have that letter from the jurisdictional agency. That's all I'm saying.
So you do not want to go looking for a federal permit just to speed the process?
Sure. Sure of that. So.
They haven't had enough fun at the local level to go into the federal.
All right.
Related to the LeBird's letter, we responded point by point with a detailed response to every one of the comments, made modifications to the plan. I think everyone can look at the updated set of plans. I don't know that you'll actually notice a difference in the plans unless you get into the defined details of the stormwater report and some minor modifications to grading. But in general, all 16 comments related to the SWIP were addressed without any substantial changes.
I think this is the third update to the stormwater. I got three books of the narrative and the calculations and all that. This is the third edition. So,
and all just technical issues, and we will continue to work with the birds to make sure that those technical issues are addressed. But again, they're relatively minor, you know, technical in our mind, and should be easily be considered a condition of approval.
You're bordering on getting your own drawer in the file cabinet.
This is a good one.
But no, I think that the review is in process, so I expect a letter from LeBurge in the next week to 10 days.
Okay. I guess my next question is for Johnson. Someone along the process,
So today there was a letter sent from their applicant council office to the town board indicating that they're going to submit a petition. I did not get a chance to read. It was a multi-page letter. I did not get a chance to read the letter. But they are, from what I guessed from the first paragraph that said we're going to submit a petition, that they're in process of doing that. But nothing has been, there's no MAP plan report or anything that's been fully submitted. Yeah, that was just a letter saying, hey, we're on the planning board tonight, so yes, we're going to do this, basically.
Yeah, it's just a tie-up, so we'll send it to everybody on the same page, because we'll be going to the town board next for...
Right.
Yeah,
and that's going to be a final approval. I would recommend that they're in the district, that they get their extension, they get everything done before final approval, and not as a condition of the final approval, but final approval once it's done. But that's not for tonight. Same thing with the DOH, you know, to go through the DOH, BLT subdivision, all that fun stuff if you need to. That's all going to be after a preliminary.
So my understanding, what's formally been asked for is preliminary approval. It can even be conditioned, but that's what they're looking for tonight. And I would remind the board, we do have the final application process to go through, the final review before the final decision. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I'd like to have the SWIP addressed, you know, before, as part of the final review, before the final decision, and I would like to have the water extension issue addressed as part of the final review and before the final decision.
So we could grant preliminary denied approval, and is there really any conditions that we need to have attached to that?
I don't think you need conditions to your preliminary. The preliminary allows them to go to DOH and to get the process moving along. Allows them, they're going to go to the town board. They're going to get that process moving along. So there will be a few months until they come back for a final. Is that your understanding?
That's correct.
Okay, so we're at the stage now where we actually need a motion to grant preliminary approval for own subdivision.
Yes. Did you talk about the road?
I mentioned it. The road amount has been going back and forth a little bit. They did a good job in terms of following through. They got an estimate from O'Connor for the overall road repair of $80,000. And what I failed to extract out of that, and the attorney clarified it for me, is that of that $80,000, they estimate that 10% or $8,000 is assigned to their impact to the degradation, or their contribution to the degradation of the road. That's their assessment. Paul looked at that, Paul Joseph, and he verbally got back to me today and then sent an email that the position he'd like to take is that, you know, he'll do the paving at the point the project is completed to get the road up to a standard condition, and he thinks a reasonable amount would be $46,000 for the cost of materials. He'll provide the labor, do the work, do the repaving. That would cover the material cost. Now, whether the applicant agrees with that, that hasn't been determined yet. What I would suggest is I wouldn't get caught up in the amount, because that's for the town board to decide. Only they can accept you know, they can create the fund to establish that payment and agree to that. However, I do think providing that framework as part of your review would be appropriate. You know, this road issue, they come to an agreement as to what a contribution should be. But as to what that exact amount is, I just don't think, as a subdivision review, we don't want to go there.
Yeah, so I really have something to do with us.
Correct.
Correct.
It doesn't change the plan.
I think you've done your due diligence. You've pointed to the issue. You know, the road needs to be brought to some reasonable level of condition. And I think that's as far as we can go. And then as what that exact amount is, that's to be negotiated with the town board.
Okay. So the motion would be to grant preliminary approval for Jacoby Farms. Period. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, because we still have the whole final stage to go through where the details become even more pronounced.
And you already completed SEACR at the last meeting.
Thank you.
And we've got to complete the CSUNs.
You did that at the last meeting, before the public hearing, and then you closed the public hearing. So, yeah.
And not unless the Carnaboo butterfly magically appears, we don't have to reopen that issue.
I'll let you know. I'll make a second.
Any further discussion?
Okay. Mr. Shaver?
Yes.
Ms. Matthias?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye.
Mr. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Siebel?
Yes.
Mr. Bouchard?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I did that wrong. I should have saved you to the end.
Yeah.
But it's my second time doing that. I will correct myself in the next one. But we have a unanimous decision nonetheless.
You're still doing a good job as a secretary.
I got the look, don't I? Pardon?
Thank you.
You guys are good.
Yes. We have. We have Baker Falls Solar.
I
had to see it up in the car.
Have a good night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night.
The pending issue around Baker Falls Solar was...
For the record, Meredith is leaving because she has to recuse herself.
Yes. That's correct. Actually.
That's the last one.
That's why I get paid to take off too. The little tiny one.
See, I knew there was a reason why you were here.
That's right.
Okay, thank you, Meredith.
See you in 2 weeks.
Yes. The pending issue here was the LaBerge report on the decommissioning plan. That came in, I believe it was last Thursday. Again, I apologize, I didn't get that earlier. I was on vacation, but it did come in last Thursday. It appeared to be very thorough and on point. I haven't had a chance to review it in detail, but the report is with us now. And according to my note here, if we had it received by August 2nd, we could consider tonight what the ask was from the applicant is to set the public hearing for the August meeting 2 weeks from this evening. Is that correct, Travis?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And if you care to do so, we can go through any of the comments in the LaBerge's letter. I've characterized them in two different ways. The first grouping of comments, there's some technical comments in there about what should and shouldn't be included in the decommissioning plan. I don't take issue with any of those. And then there's a number of comments related to how the value is calculated. I think one of the key takeaways is they agree with the basic approach of the reference in there to a unit price per megawatt. They ask that it be updated from the 2017 to the 2021 number. We don't take any issue with that. So, I again, we can go through any of those in detail, but there's nothing in there that we take issue with. And again, the decommissioning value and bond or surety, whatever form it takes, is ultimately approved by the town board.
Again, that's going to be a little awkward aspect to this, is how we transition into the from the site plan review to the approval of the town board for the decommissioning plan.
The main point here is that there is a decommissioning plan and a decommissioning surety that is required.
Right, right. And what I would ask Travis is, to the extent that the decommissioning plan has to be revised and updated to be consistent with the LaBerge comments, that would be appropriate to get at least that much done, and we can forward that on maybe to the town board and begin that process once we have.
Yeah, remember, we're only at public hearing stage, so we've got a few meetings to go here, and certainly we'll work with NextAmp to update that decommission.
Well, but what I was saying in that regard, we can do this concurrently. We can get the process started with the town board as the site plan review process with you guys continues.
Is there anybody on the agenda already?
Let's see. We have the car wash is back. That came in, so that'll be on for sure. We just got a brand new one on Route 9 for some sort. I think it's some sort of warehousing or manufacturing. I'm not sure, but that just came in this evening. Let me see.
Do we have anybody?
Yes, we have
a public hearing.
Yes, we have Tracy, and now hopefully we'll have this public hearing for this applicant. So we'll have two public hearings potentially if you approve it tonight.
Right. We have someone at the 701 slot.
Yes, it's Casey Subdivision is at the 701 slot.
I just want to make sure we have a double book.
Right. Please say 705.
I think the public hearing for Travis will be very long.
I think I've had one or two people, like there's been a neighbor or two that's had some inquiry. I don't think they're necessarily opposed. They just had some questions.
Yeah.
I think there is some potential we get a comment or two or a letter or something like that. I think there is a potential. But I haven't heard any controversy at my end.
Yeah,
I
don't either.
I was a neighbor in Detroit. Industrial neighbor with solar panels, they're really quiet.
And they don't smell.
Yeah, they don't smell either. They have no trucks.
No trucks.
Mom, does anybody have any? I'll make a motion to set a public hearing for 7:05 on August 16th or 23rd? 16th?
It's 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks from tonight. So yeah, 16.
7:05 p.m. August 16th. It would be Baker Falls Solar LLC.
The only comment I wanted to make is my only comment on the notes back from engineering on this was, really wish people would stop calling these solar farms. They're not farms, okay? The solar installation is more accurate. But
you're not going to get past that.
The rest of it would
be really good.
I didn't say I think I should win that one. I'm just saying I want it on the record that I really don't like that.
Well, stop calling solar farms when they stop calling wind farms.
See, I don't believe that wind farms is even as accurate as solar farms. I think solar farms are more accurate. I have an actual solar farm.
Rolls on Wednesday.
I think about you every time I had to go pick up Chris Crocker.
Every time you go down Route 50, you're within a quarter mile of my house. You go to that Baptist Health Center? You know where that is?
So I don't go 50. I get off exit. Sometimes I get off at 9W. Sometimes I get off at 8. Sorry?
No,
we were talking about driving to Connecticut.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Is that good?